Are you ready to realize the true potential in your life and help others do the same? Get equipped to create a thriving future with the Secrets of Success podcast. Inspire others to live, lead, and work on purpose, and experience the joy of watching satisfaction and productivity come to life. And now, here's your host, Dr. Ken Keyes.
Welcome to the Secrets of Success podcast. I'm Dr. Ken Keyes. Well, each session we try to have an amazing guest with us to be able to have your life, to live your life on purpose and well and with health. And today is absolutely no exception. We are absolutely privileged to have you, New York Times bestseller Jonathan Baylor, the author of The Calorie Myth, with us today. And so we only have a short amount of time. So without further ado, Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Ken. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Jonathan, I as a bestseller author and really making a difference in people's lives about wellness, I think one of the things that the listeners would like to know is, what about this journey? What motivated Jonathan really to become an expert on health and wellness? Because, I mean, your background is really around technology, isn't it, before you came into this?
It is. I have a very eclectic background, and my journey to wellness was ever since I was a small child. I actually grew up in a very academic household. I had two college professor parents, and I also had a much older brother who was very athletic and 10 years older than I am. So as a little guy, I was super looking up to him, and I also had an obsession with Superman. And you take all those things and you put them together, and I wanted to be big and strong. And that was just the net takeaway. I want to be big and strong like my brother. I want to be like Superman. So even ever since I was little, my mother will tell you stories of me watching the Superman movies or watching the Rocky movies and then going out to my jungle gym and trying to do pull-ups and things along.
Well, you've just off any roofs lately?
No, none of that stuff. But that pursuit, ever since I was little, then was parlayed into becoming a personal trainer and getting into the natural bodybuilding world. And I wanted to be a big, strong athlete. I was going to play sports I was going to play football in college. But I started to very quickly realize a bit of a challenge, and that was I could not gain weight, which I know may sound odd in the modern culture, but there
right.
are quite a few people who actually struggled with weight, with the ability to gain weight at all. And this really came to a head when I was a personal trainer. That's the way I paid my way through college. And I was eating about 6,000 calories per day in an effort to get big and strong while training people who were objectively smarter, more accomplished people than I was, because I'm an 18, 19, 20-year-old kid at the time sitting across from just brilliant professionals. I'm putting them on 1,200-calorie diets. They're not able to lose weight. It has nothing to do with their effort. It has nothing to do with their willpower. And I couldn't rationalize in my brain, how is it that I can eat five times more calories than these brilliant individuals, not gain weight, and they can't lose weight? There has to be something deeper going on here. And that's what then sent me on the research journey, which then led to all the things that exist today.
Awesome. Well, I just encourage people, if they haven't already, is that they definitely get The Calorie Myth. And there's more references in the back of your book than probably 10 or 12 other health books all combined. So you've been on this journey, and, you know, as a health expert myself, one of the things that really is apparent, Jonathan, is we are a sick society. We are not well. And I just wanted to ask your observation and all the work you're doing. Why is it that we are so ill? And even though this information is out there and your book's a bestseller, why do we still continue to have so many individuals who are obese, overweight, and really not well at all?
That's a great question, Ken. And that's why I'm not giving you the immediate answer. I mean, I've got my standard answer, but I actually want to give you a better answer. And the better, deeper answer is, I think we have a tendency to do the opposite of what, like, a Stephen Covey teaches us, which is put first things first when it comes to health. I think as a culture, we tend, especially the listeners to your podcast, they're probably savvy people, they do take steps already to try to optimize their health. I mean, we're the most health conscious culture on the planet. If you go to Europe or other countries, the idea of like constantly exercising and all this talk about food, it doesn't exist there. So we have this weird dichotomy where we are the most health conscious culture while simultaneously being the least healthy culture. And I think the reason for that is it's not that we're not trying to be healthy. It's that the things we're trying are the wrong things. For example, we're trying to eat fewer calories. So that leads us to stop eating actual food and to start eating processed, quote unquote, like low calorie snack packs. Or we're trying to do more cardiovascular exercise, which unfortunately the research shows us, if our eating habits aren't proper, just causes us to eat more of the very foods that cause weight gain in the first place. Or we beat ourselves up for not, you know, drinking out of the right water bottle when we're not eating vegetables. And, you know, we're putting all this time and effort and money into, like, making sure we buy the right water bottle. Not that it's not good to have a good water bottle, but if we're not eating vegetables, worrying about how you're getting your water out of your water bottle is a little bit like your car's on fire and you're cleaning off the windshield. Like, yeah, it's great to have a clean windshield, but shouldn't we put the engine that's on fire out first?
Well, I want to stop you, Jonathan, because I'm not sure if everybody listening to this show just heard what you said, is that we should not be looking towards a low-calorie, quote-unquote, process to lose weight or to get fit. What do you mean by that? Everybody's been told through sort of the general media that you need to work out more and you need to cut your calories, and you're saying that's not true.
The simple answer is it's not true. The more nuanced answer is it's horribly incomplete and counterproductive if not completed. What I mean by that is if the types of calories you're currently eating have made you overweight, depressed, hypertensive, or diabetic, just eating fewer of them is analogous to saying, I am going to try to avoid lung cancer by smoking shorter cigarettes. Like, it will slow down the development of lung cancer, but it will still cause you to get lung cancer, albeit slower. So the problem is not the amount of calories we're eating. It's the type of calories we're eating, because what the research has shown unambiguously is that if you eat the right quality of calories, it's not that calories don't exist, it's not that if you eat 10,000 calories of butter you won't gain weight. What the research shows is that if you eat the right types of calories, you don't have to think about how much you're eating, because your brain and your hormones and your gut will automatically regulate calorie balance, just like it automatically regulates everything else in your body that's essential for life, such as breathing and blood pressure and blood sugar levels. So it's we don't want to smoke shorter cigarettes in our effort to get healthier. We want to just breathe in an abundance of clean air.
So for us, if we think about eating, what is it that we need to be eating and need to be putting into our bodies? And what is it that we need to be avoiding at sort of like all costs? What is the smoking of food, if you want to call it that? And what is the healthy, abundant, refreshing air that's vibrant to our body?
Without question, the healthiest, most refreshing air or food on the planet is non-starchy vegetables, which is ironically, despite all the contrary messages we've heard about health and fitness every single day, everyone has said forever, eat more vegetables. And they're 100% right. And Ken, the irony is it's the one thing we don't do, right? We'll put all this time and energy in the most recent exercise trend. We'll put all this time and energy into buying this special new pill. We'll do all this time and energy to get organic grass-fed meat. But if you ask someone, how many servings of green leafy vegetables do you eat on average per day? In the nation, it's zero. And even among healthy people, it's usually like maybe one. So just like take all the effort you're spending on everything else and focus it in terms of your wellness on eating more green leafy vegetables. That will probably do more for your health than any other positive dietary change you could make. And by making that positive dietary change, and when I say positive, I mean adding something, it will make it much easier to subtract processed starches, sweets, and fats. So these are refined, junky food, processed food, things that don't need to be refrigerated or frozen, if we can fill ourselves with so much nutrient-dense food like green leafy vegetables, such that we're too full for these processed starches, sweets, things like soda, those are absolute kryptonite for our metabolism.
What about diet sodas, Jonathan? What's the word on the street about that?
Well, diet sodas are a funny example because according to the calorie mythology, they should be as harmless or helpful as water, right? Because they don't have any calories in them, so therefore, they're totally fine. But we can already see the calorie logic falling down there because we all know that diet soda is not as benign as water. And by that same analogy, cigarettes would also be benign because they don't have any calories. And Zoloft is benign because it also doesn't contain calories. So there's more than just calories. Diet soda is a perfect example of that.
We are stirring some listeners up today, and we're not trying to be offensive. I think we're trying to really help people to be successful in this. Yet, at the same time, Jonathan, governments, the FDAs of the world or other sort of agencies are still putting sort of grains and breads at the base of the pyramid. What's going on there? Why is that?
Well, it's really important to keep in mind that once an institution or even an individual says something publicly, it's very difficult to get them to say, oh, oops, I was wrong. So we need to go back in time and see why that happened initially. And the reason it happened initially, aka where did the initial government dietary guidelines come from, that came after World War II with us being fearful as a country that we would actually have widespread famine in anticipation of the baby boom. So then our government, with noble intentions in mind, re-architected the entire agriculture system. This is the United States Department of Agriculture, right? It's called the United States Department of Agriculture, not the United States Department of Health or Fat Loss or Diabetes Prevention. And they engineered a food system and also a set of dietary guidelines that would produce abundant food. And they succeeded. And foods that we can produce in abundance in the United States happen to be things like wheat, like corn, I mean, amber waves of grain, right? So just supply and demand. We said we need to produce more food so that our country doesn't starve. What are the foods we can produce easily, and how can we create demand for those foods? At the end of the day, we ended up with a food guide pyramid that said eat 6 to 11 servings of starchy grains. And once you say that for 40 years, it's really hard to just say, just kidding. So now we're fighting against 40 years of misguided guidance.
And sorry, yeah, we were completely wrong. And so unfortunately, arrogance, pride, whatever element comes in there. And, you know, one of your colleagues is William Davis, who wrote the best-selling book, Wheat Belly. He recently actually was in a parliamentary committee here in Canada talking about the nature of gluten and grain. And it wasn't 3 minutes that he was done his presentation that dietitians were trying to slam him. So how is it that even professionals who are supposed to know what's going on are still ignorant to what the truth is, Jonathan?
There's a myth, especially in the nutrition community, that better equals good. What do I mean by this? So smoking one pack of cigarettes per day is objectively better for your health than smoking two packs of cigarettes per day. That doesn't mean you should recommend smoking a pack of cigarettes per day. Now, the problem that most dietitians face is that, and to be fair, the dietary habits of most individuals, especially in America, are so atrocious that saying eat more whole grains is better than if your lunch is Cheetos and Pepsi. If you were to switch to whole grains, you would be healthier. But switching from Cheetos and Pepsi to whole grains is a little bit like switching from two packs of cigarettes to one. It is better, but that doesn't mean it's good. And that's the problem we face. The question isn't how do we go from an F to a D or to a C, but how do we go from an F to an A? Whole grains and starches might take us to a D or a C, but they will definitely not get us to an A.
Okay, well, Jonathan, we only have about 10 minutes left or a little bit more. So what is it that, just go through the process with me now. I am now your client. I'm going to follow your recommendation. So first of all, let's start with the food, and then we'll talk a little bit about high-intensity workouts for a moment at the end of the show. So just take me through. You started with vegetables, and we want to have that as a majority of our diet. What percentage are you thinking about? Is there a number that's kind of optimum? And then what else would we include in our diet?
Your diet in an ideal or sane sense, and there's a lot more information about this, of course, on our website, sanesolution.com, is going to be predominantly non-starchy vegetables. So you're looking at double-digit servings of that per day, or half your plate is non-starchy vegetables. And then next on the list is what we call nutrient-dense protein. So these are going to be things like ideally wild-caught seafood or humanely raised meats or certain low-sugar forms of dairy, such as Greek yogurt or cottage cheese. Don't have a bunch of sugars added to it. And then, so you're going to eat probably 30 grams or so worth of nutrient-dense protein, ideally at every meal. And that's not 30 grams of food, that's 30 grams of protein. So the size of the food is actually larger than that. And then you're going to get the bulk of your calories or your energy, because vegetables really don't provide you with a lot of energy, nor does protein. It's more of a structural building block for your body, from whole food fat. So these are things like nuts and seeds and eggs, as fat is the preferred fuel source for your body, which is why fat is stored on your body, because that's what your body wants to burn for fuel. And then as a little accoutrement, you would eat low-sugar fruits, such as berries and citrus. So that's what you're looking at. Non-starchy vegetables, nutrient-dense protein, whole food fats, and what we call low-fructose fruits.
Well, let's just back up for a second. A lot of times people have been told for years that fat makes you fat. Now I'm confused if I'm listening to this show. You're saying, just clarify with us about the fat side of things.
Yeah, anecdotally, think about fat making you fat a little bit like eating green vegetables makes you green. Like it rolls off the tongue really nicely, but it's unfortunately not at all true. Fat, the reason fat is thought of as making you fat is fat does provide you with more calories per gram than protein or carbohydrate does, but calories aren't bad. In fact, if you don't eat calories, you die of starvation. So fat doesn't make you fat. Fat just fills you up quickly with less food needing to be consumed. So there was a misunderstanding early on in the scientific research where if you just eat more calories, you're going to get fat, and fat has more calories than carbohydrate or protein, therefore eating fat makes you fat. And that is actually not the case at all. Eating fat, the right kinds of fat, just makes you feel full, which is great because it can actually prevent you from eating a bunch of nonsense sugar, for example.
Awesome. And I know there are bad fats. So what are those that we want to avoid that really will be harmful to us?
There's good and bad everything. And that's really important to keep in mind, because there is no carbs are bad or fat is good and protein is bad. There's good and bad everything, or what we would call sane or insane, of all three of the macronutrients. So let's get the holistic picture here. And the holistic sense of fat is we want to eat what I call whole food fats. So these are fats that are found in whole food contexts. An egg is 65% fat, which means it gets most of its calories from fat. It's a wonderful nutrient-dense source of calories, so it's a whole food fat. The same thing would apply to nuts and seeds. Now, contrast that with, say, partially hydrogenated soybean oil. Right? Mm. Hopefully, just your intuition can tell you partially hydrogenated soybean oil, when contrasted with an almond, is going to be a very, very different source of fat for your body. And the same thing applies to protein. For example, wild-caught salmon is wonderful for you, whereas Spam or processed hot dogs is garbage for you. So there's good and bad proteins, there's good and bad fats. And then when it comes to carbohydrate, a sane lifestyle is not a low-carbohydrate diet. It's a high-quality carbohydrate diet. So non-starchy vegetables and low-fructose fruits are both carbohydrates. And eating more non-starchy vegetables is the single most important thing you can do for your health. So again, we're just focusing on the highest quality or sanest sources of all the macronutrients, protein, carbs, and fat.
Thank you, Jonathan. I think that just clarifies. And those of you that are listening, if you missed all those details, just reverse the podcast and then listen to it again and again. And the other one is make sure that you get Jonathan's book, The Calorie Myth. and be able to have that on your shelf and become a student of wellness instead of really kind of taking in all this media that has sort of false information with it. Well, Jonathan, one of the other things that you teach about is really around high intensity and focused workouts in terms of weights and aerobics. Just quickly go through that that process for us, where it just kind of goes against what other people are teaching. Well, I need to work out for 90 minutes or 120, and most of us say, I'm too busy. So what is that? What are you talking about as far as high intensity or just slow sort of reverse weight training? Just go with that with us.
Ken, this is one of the most exciting areas that I uncovered during my research and something that my company is definitely going to be sharing more about later, because there's been a huge demand for it because it is so impactful. And really, again, it's the same basic premise as everything we just talked about in terms of eating, where the calorie is not the primary focus and quantity is not the primary focus. Quality is. So what I mean by that is, just like when we eat, we say we're not eating to reduce calories, we're eating to improve the quality of the calories we're consuming so that we can change our hormone levels, for example, among other things. The same logic applies to exercise, whereas, yes, if the goal of exercise is to burn as many calories while you exercise as possible, then yes, you should do 90 minutes of jogging because you'll burn the most calories in that instance. But what if calories aren't the focal point, which we know now they are not? Not that they don't matter, it's that they're not the focal point. What we need to do is need to change the hormonal composition of our body. We need to change our body to be promoting the burning of fat rather than the storing of fat, and that's a hormonal problem. So the way we do that with exercise is by exercising with a different what's called modality. So instead of exercise that's focused on burning calories, we focus on exercise that triggers the greatest stimulation of our muscle fibers. And why would we do that? The reason we do that is it's the amount and type of muscle fibers, and just for science, so obviously, you know, you have different muscles on your body, right? You have like your quadricep muscles on the front of your leg versus your bicep muscles in your arm. And we know that when you walk, for example, your quadricep muscle is getting activated and your bicep muscle is not necessarily. So in addition to different types of muscles, we have different fibers within those muscles. And by doing what I call eccentric, or what is called in the research literature, eccentric exercise, or heavy, slow resistance training, what we're able to do is we're able to activate all of our muscle fibers and all of our muscle groups, and potentially even a category of muscle fibers that it's very likely that you have never activated in your entire life. And by doing that, you unlock a release of hormones in your body that trigger what's called an anabolic cascade, which basically means that, yes, you exercise, you do these eccentric exercises, and you've essentially flipped a switch in your body that helps to shift it into fat-burning mode for days and potentially weeks afterwards. So it's not about how many calories can I burn right now. It's about how can I flip this switch to change the way my body works for days and weeks after the exercise.
Well, just to give you a personal example, and I want you to kind of continue on that, is, you know, let's say we're doing a bench press, and so I switched my workout to this format. My weight is half the weight that it used to be, Jonathan, as we go through like a 5 or a 10 second cycle up and a 5 or a 10 second cycle down versus trying to push that weight as fast as possible. Maybe you can quickly explain the science behind that, where I'm just pushing that weight as consistently, as slowly as possible, whatever that might be, and what's happening to us at that time, and how that's helping us and how that's better than, you know, trying to push the heaviest weight possible.
There's two really important nuances to eccentric training. One is you'll notice that it's very slow when contrasted with like CrossFit, which is a very explosive movement. And the other is that we actually focus more on lowering weights rather than lifting weights. So it's kind of confusing in that sense. But both of those things matter very, very much, because I think we can all agree that when we talk about fitness and health, the quickest way to destroy your fitness and health is to get injured. So if any form of exercise exposes you to unnecessary risk, man, that could be counterproductive. I think we could all agree that if you had a buddy come up to you and say, hey, man, I'm looking to improve my health and fitness, and to do that, I'm going to start doing Ultimate Fighting, we might say, okay, there might be a less side effect.
That's right.
way to do that.
You better wear some headgear, buddy.
Exactly, exactly. So when we look at exercise, we have to look at its long-term viability. And so moving slowly is objectively, there's a reason why driving 15 miles per hour in a school zone is recommended versus driving 75 miles per hour. When you're moving faster, you're more likely to get hurt. So we want to move slower in general, if that makes sense. Now,
or hurt somebody else. Now, I know we're getting close to the end of our time, Jonathan, and I sorry to kind of interrupt you, but what I'd like you to do in the last 3 minutes that we have, can you summarize with all the work and all the effort, what are some key recommendations that you would give to me to say, Ken, if you do these things, these are foundational. And then number two is how people can get a hold of you and some of the stuff that you have to offer. So you just got a couple of minutes to wrap that up for us. And then we can always have you back on the show another time.
Three key recommendations are easy and transformative. The first is radically increase the amount of green vegetables you're eating. And the easiest way to do that are green smoothies. And we have all sorts of free resources around free green smoothie recipes at sanesolution.com. So more green vegetables, and the easiest way to do that is green smoothies. Second recommendation would be shift from eating most of your calories from sugar and starch to eating most of your calories from nutrient-dense protein and whole food fats. So think more nuts and seeds and eggs and seafood and meat in addition to those vegetables rather than pasta and bread and carbs and things like that. And then last but not least, sleep more. Sleep, we don't have a chance to talk about that, but if you're doing all this stuff perfectly and only getting 4 hours of sleep per night, it's a little bit like trying to make your car run better without putting gasoline in the tank. It just won't work. So sleep is very important. And there's obviously many more things you could do, and you can learn all of those things and a lot more and get a bunch of great free resources at Sane, S-A-N-E, Solution, S-O-L-U-T-I-O-N, SaneSolution.com.
Well, Jonathan, I certainly appreciate the time. And just a sidebar question on that is, how much sleep are you suggesting?
7 hours per night-ish. That's what the research shows is to be a pretty good benchmark. If you fall below six, that's definitely a problem. You probably don't need to go over eight. So seven is a pretty good sweet spot.
Well, thank you, Jonathan. Jonathan Baylor, man, you're awesome. And the book is The Calorie Myth, plus SaneSolutions.com. Now, I'm Dr. Ken Keyes, and you've been listening to Secrets of Success. Jonathan, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Ken.
And, if you've really enjoyed this show, I just encourage you that you would share this with your friends, that you would pass this on, and that you would take the steps that Jonathan has shared here so that your health and, as a result of that, is that's going to be your wealth in life is going to be better than it's ever been before. Thank you again for listening. I'm Dr. Ken Keyes, and this is Secrets of Success Podcast.
Thanks for exploring the secrets of success with us. If you want to keep the momentum going, log on to crgleader.com. Scroll to the bottom and sign up for our inspirational emails. You can also take your success to the next level by following us on Facebook and Twitter and connecting with Ken on LinkedIn. We hope you have a great week and look forward to you joining us next time for the Secrets of Success podcast with Dr. Ken Keyes.